Ladies and gentlemen, happy Monday. Welcome back to Group Chat. We have a special post today. We decided to post the audio from our little live session at the Young and Reckless live event on Saturday for everyone who couldn't make it. And to everyone who did make it, I can't say thank you enough. The turnout was insane. The event was completely sold out. And the turnout and the level of engagement for our Group Chat live was incredible, and I think just constantly blows us away every time we do one of those things. The people that show up, how much people are paying attention to what we say on the podcast, and specifically how engaged that audience was on Saturday. So thank you so much to everyone who came out. And if you couldn't make it and you're in the LA area, we have another live event tomorrow. This one's just Group Chat Live. It's at Peppermint Nightclub. That one's completely free. All you have to do to come is send a RSVP email to live@group-chat.com. Come out and check it out. But if you can't make it, if you couldn't make it on Saturday, this will give you a little bit of a sample of what we're talking about at these live shows. And as we go, we're going to continue to build on this live thing and figure out how we could do it in different areas and more frequently. And we really think this is a huge piece of this Group Chat thing. So check it out. Make sure you hit us up. Let us know what you think. Hit us up on Instagram at Group Chat Pod. Make sure you subscribe to the newsletter at group-chat.com. Thank you guys. We'll see everyone tomorrow, and we'll be back on Wednesday with a full episode.
Cash.
Ladies and gentlemen, Group Chat.
Go, Woody, go.
Okay. So first topic is social media, right? I think everyone here, how many people here are entrepreneurs? I saw Ryan do it, but can we do it again? That's a shit ton. Okay, so I think everyone here is very familiar with the topic of social media, especially for building a personal brand or for marketing your business, right? Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's watching Gary Vee. Everyone's trying to figure out the tricks. But one of the things that we came across in the last couple weeks in our office is trying to figure out, you know, there's so many platforms. There's only so many things that you can give your attention to. And trying to find the right platforms for your particular business or your particular audience is really important. So literally in the last week, Dee and I both jumped onto new platforms but took two totally separate directions. Dee chose to sit down and really try to figure out LinkedIn. He thinks that there's a lot of people, a lot of room for growth on LinkedIn. And his type of content, he gives very practical business advice. He thinks his type of content will do really well on LinkedIn. He started off and had really good success already in the last week. I chose to go the younger route and go for TikTok. So I have been making silly little videos at the office all week, trying to make sure I stay connected to the younger next generation of young and reckless customer, right? So that being said, both of those are platforms that a lot of people are talking about. I think we all know Instagram is a given. So I wanted to kind of have a discussion about the different platforms, where you should go, and how people even navigate this world of platforms.
Yeah, so I think the most interesting thing is I chose LinkedIn 2 weeks ago, and Drama, like you said, chose TikTok. Our president chose Twitch. He launched a verified Twitch account 10 days ago.
Is he gaming?
No, you know what I realized what the real reason is? So Trump rallies were a big ratings grabber in the last election.
Yep.
And apparently internally at a lot of news channels, they're piping down on Trump rallies for this election season. Yep. So I think this guy is a genius when it comes to social media. So he knows his rallies are not going to be played on TV anymore. So he went to Twitch. He only has 30, this is as of last night, like 40,000 followers on Twitch. Bernie Sanders is on Twitch as well. But it's just, you know, we sit here and talking about Instagram and Facebook or whatever, and our president's already on Twitch. I'm like, I'm not on Twitch yet. He beat us to it.
Yeah. He has a good agency.
He does have the greatest agency.
Yeah.
And I think it just shows you that there's so much opportunity on social media, and everyone thinks about the same things. Like, I came to the realization that I'm never going to be an Instagram influencer.
Wow, you admitted that?
I admitted it because it's like, I'm not good looking enough. The only time I get really good engagement is if I either post my wife or child.
Yeah.
So it's just coming to the hard And like that, posting my wife and kid doesn't help me sell more clothes.
But so damn, you're still trying, because I see a lot of check marks when I click on your.
I'm not giving up. I'm just saying, like, I know that it's not a realistic path. So LinkedIn now has popped up. So Taylor, if anyone's trying to build a LinkedIn following, meet Taylor. Raise your hand.
Stand up, Taylor.
Taylor, stand up.
Everyone harass Taylor if you want to learn LinkedIn.
He's also the author of our newsletter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And if you... If you're a real group chat fan and are subscribed to our newsletter, Taylor's the man behind the newsletter.
But I think the interesting thing is I'm 39 years old, and I'm trying to constantly stay relevant within the social media strategies. And Taylor, months ago, was saying, gotta get on LinkedIn. And obviously I ignored him probably for 6 months. And finally, 2 weeks ago, I said, let's give it a shot. And fortunately for us, we have access to people like Taylor. He sat and gave me a lecture yesterday on LinkedIn in a group of us. And it made me realize that there's such a massive opportunity in growing your following outside of the traditional ways. So there's TikTok, where Drama's focusing his effort. Our president is focused on Twitch. There's another one I got turned on to called Triller. I mean, that's a whole nother version of TikTok. And it's just, you have to really be thoughtful of like, what is your goal and who you're trying to reach? And I think politicians just do it better. They know how to reach.
Not all of them. Most of them are so terrible.
I think only one of them.
No, but
only one of them.
I mean, Obama did it. Oh, there we go. Bud Light. Thank you.
Wow.
Only can open it. Bro.
Wow.
That's a twist off. It's American beer.
I don't really drink beer. but I think the New York Times just did an article 2 days ago about a woman and her 48 hours of experience on TikTok, and the biggest takeaway I got was, she believes that TikTok is more inclusive because it's not about followers, it's about your content. Like you posted a video and you got how many views?
Yeah, I'm viral. I already got like 120,000 views with 2,000 followers.
And I think it eliminates the stress of having followers and just put out content and just see what happens.
And also I think that what's happening, at least what I see, is Instagram is worried about how to monetize and organic reach has like dropped off a cliff. And so everyone's like dealing with the, you know, depression of realizing they won't be Instagram famous. On TikTok, they're trying to grow the app and expose you to more people. So if you play by the rules of TikTok of what's trending or what song is hot or whatever, they will serve you to more and more and more people. And these things go crazy viral and you build these followings. I think for brands and for any business that is at all trying to market to that demographic, there's such a like obvious cheat code right now to have that initial success.
Yeah, and what you're referencing is the thing that people don't talk about is TikTok is an engineering phenomenon. The fact that someone with only a few hundred followers can go viral with hundreds of thousands of views or a million views is because they're able algorithmically to figure out like, oh, this content's buzzing even in like a very small niche and start serving to other people and see how it compounds. And that is courtesy of the Chinese. The Chinese are just better.
By the way, we love China. We love China.
I think like what's happening on Instagram is when you post a video on Instagram, they're serving it to such a small part of your own audience only. And if it doesn't hit a certain number, they're not serving it to any more.
Okay,
whereas TikTok, they're saying, ooh, there's something here. Let's show it to everybody.
Right.
Give everything a chance. And I think that that's not going to last forever, right? Just like anything else, they're eventually going to get so big that you don't do that. It doesn't work like that anymore. So I think right now is this huge opportunity. I think you got to start dancing on TikTok.
Well, you had a song on TikTok.
I do have a song on TikTok.
I'm just saying, it could be your opportunity. You could be looking for fame in all the wrong places.
What kind of dance?
I don't know, man.
For reference, you should just talk about what Jay Sean was able to do on TikTok.
Yeah, our friend Jay Sean has a song called Write It from 10 years ago. And a Croatian DJ, just young kid, did a remix of it. It went viral on TikTok. And now that song, Write It, the remix, is a charting top 10 record in the UK.
And Australia.
Yeah. And it just came out of nowhere. This happened in 90 days. Yep. A 10-year-old song.
Yeah, that's going to be me. just popular as shit.
With that's where, what was your song?
That's where Lil Nas X came
what
from.
What was your song?
What's my
Daddy's
song?
Lambo.
Daddy's Lambo.
Yeah. I'm bringing it back. But that's like the whole Lil Nas X phenomenon started on TikTok.
So let's say you're an individual today. You have limited resources in terms of putting toward content creation. We obviously have teams, so we can try everything. But what would you do?
Definitely not Instagram.
I would say literally anything but Instagram. Like, it depends on who you're talking to, who your demo is. If it's more your demo, it is more of a LinkedIn thing.
Are you
thing.
Saying Indians? Is that racist?
I'm saying old people.
Okay.
It's more LinkedIn. You can really use a cheat code and really have a lot of success. Definitely if you're at all in the, like, 25 and under, 26, maybe 28 and under, definitely TikTok. And I think even what we've seen, just to go totally outside of that, the success that we've seen with podcasting is huge. Because I think that there's no tricks to algorithms there. It's really hard to gain an audience because you're asking them to sit and listen to you for an hour. But once you have them, they really are, they feel like they're your friend. And they're really engaged and they're really locked into what you're talking about and selling.
I think the most interesting thing about TikTok is that it actually is just about fun and having a good time. It's nothing else.
But also Gary Vee has had a lot of, I know his guy Phil's in here, he's had a lot of success on TikTok doing what he does, but just
really?
Altering a little bit, yeah. He posted a video the other day of like a 13-year-old kid coming up to him and saying, hey, you're the guy from TikTok. And it's like after all this that he's done content-wise, there's still new people. So I think that right now TikTok is known for silly, funny, meme-y stuff, the same way Instagram was known for putting cool filters on scenic photos in the beginning. But I do think that all of these big companies and all these big people are trying to figure out how to use it, and it's going to alter to something else, I think.
Okay.
And it's interesting, we didn't even mention YouTube. So we talk about TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Which is also huge.
And yeah, where does YouTube fit in all of this?
YouTube can, the thing about YouTube is I think it's so broad. Like you can be like a meme marketing to 12-year-olds, you can be Ryan's Toys Reviews, or you can be making documentaries. You know what I mean? Like you can do literally, I mean, I think YouTube is like television. You can be anything in that.
So you think YouTube sits above all of this? Kind of.
I think YouTube is way more broad. It can be any of those things. But I think like when it comes to what somebody could leave here and start tomorrow, leaving here and starting tomorrow on a YouTube channel that's going to become really successful, let's say in 3 or 6 months, is really, really hard.
I think
when we're talking about cheat codes and we're talking about like, because everyone's trying to do the same thing. So we're talking about how can you get a leg up?
Sure.
I think that one of those is the way.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. A lot of people ask us, a lot of our listeners are, you know, I would say mid to late 20s, early 30s, maybe newly having some success or trying to find success. And one of the biggest questions that we get asked is, you know, they don't have a lot of money to invest, but they do want to invest. Where should they invest? Please give me a cheat code on that as well. You guys have some interesting information about some interesting investing strategies that could have paid off big time.
Yeah, so we were fortunate. We're early investors in a lot of like really successful early stage tech investments. And a lot of young people come to us who've saved up money and say, I want to invest in startups. I want to invest in the next Uber or hopefully not WeWork. So I started looking up just returns on the stock market. And then I started looking at particular companies. And if you had invested $1,000 in Google 10 years ago, you would have made like, I don't know, I think it went up 670%. And then Anna looked up Amazon, and if you had invested $1,000, it would have returned 23 times in the last 10 years. So those two, just those two returns are probably better than like 98% of all funds.
Probably 99.9.
Yeah, sure. So
there's probably like a few funds that have returned better than 23x in 10 years.
Yeah, and so these are the most brilliant people that we all look up to and think they're like swamis of investing, and they can't beat a stock in the public market. So that's really the opportunity, is that we're all overthinking, trying to like disrupt the world, and then there's great companies out there in the public market that we all have access to that we can all invest in. So there's going to be the next Amazon, the next Google. You just have to really believe in a company and give time, because I think time is the thing that no one wants to give when it comes to investing. There's investments we've given 10 years ago that we haven't seen returns on.
Sure, a lot.
A lot of investments.
A lot of zeros,
a lot
too.
You never will.
And a lot of zeros. We have a
So I think about it two different ways, right? So there's private investing where if you have unique access to these great companies and they turn out to be these billion-dollar unicorns, great. But if you just want to simplify investing the way I think about it, right? Like, so Amazon, right now. Amazon controls, I think, about 2% of all U.S. commerce. Do you think that 2% is going to 4?
I think it's going to 10.
Okay. So I think Amazon is probably a safe company to think about. Like, just, you don't need to, like, really think that much about this stuff. Like, oh, is Amazon going to be bigger in 10 years than it is today? I think we all say yes. Probably a safe company. Google? Yeah, I think Google's going to be bigger in 10 years than they are today. Like, we don't need to overcomplicate investing, and it's more like, think more broadly about industries I'm just talking about tech, but you could do this, you know, exercise for every industry and figure out, like, okay, what are the great companies in the industry? Are they going to be bigger 5 to 10 years from now? And you have to think about it in that horizon. Don't think about it in the 6 to 12 month horizon.
Yeah, I agree. Also, you mentioned WeWork. Good investment, bad. What are we thinking there?
What do you think?
It seems pretty cool.
Yeah, you like Adam Neumann?
Yeah, seems pretty promising. But another thing is that all of these, so we've had this interesting thing happened with all these tech companies going public, and a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them have fallen off a cliff.
Yep.
We have a list of 5 newly public companies whose lockups, so most people might know this, might not. When you IPO, you have a 6-month lockup before you can sell your shares, right? So for a lot of these companies, those lockups are now ending. So it's going to get interesting what people do, what the founders, what the people with all of these shares do now that these lockups are over. What are we thinking here, guys?
So, like, Chewy, Uber, Beyond, Zoom, and Pinterest lockups all end in the next 45 days. And some of them, a company like Beyond did phenomenal, and I'm sure their employees are going to probably sell stock and buy big ass houses. And then there's other people, like the Uber stock, since IPO date is down 30%. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people started working at these companies in the hopes that their company would go public. Then they go public and you're like, everyone's just anxious for that 6-month period, and then you dump your stock. I'm curious to see when the stock is down 30%. Do you think they're just like, fuck it, Uber's not gonna come back from this?
Yeah, I would guess employees will do that, and small shareholders. But the problem with the bigger shareholders is they can't actually dump their stock because it will crater the rest of their holdings. So it's a very tricky game. And, you know, Facebook went through this, but I'm not saying any of these companies are Facebook. So when Facebook IPO'd, it was like a $32 a share. I forget what that represented in market cap. It went down to like 18 bucks, and all the people we know that were really early on all sold.
Yeah, I have a friend who was like number 10 employee there, and I asked him years later after it hit like a record high, and he was like, oh yeah, I sold it as the day the lockup ended.
Yeah, which was like 30, 40% below IPO price, which is now 10x from that. So those people would have been 10 times richer had
they not. So are all of those stocks at risk? Because all of those people could potentially
No, I think the 6-month lockup is more for the media than it is for actual reflection on stock price, because the actual stakeholders aren't incentivized to sell enough to actually crater the stock. Because, yeah, they could sell like 5, 10%, get some cash out, but if they sold their entire stake, the stock would crater, and then everyone's fucked.
Yeah, like if the Saudis dump their Uber stake, it's toast.
Yeah, the Saudis are in a tough spot. They're in WeWork and Uber.
Dump it. Okay, moving on. There's a lot of entrepreneurs here. We have this article. Mark Cuban is letting everyone know what the biggest mistake that everyone makes when starting a business is. What is it? Let's get some. Mark couldn't make it today, so let's get some wisdom from him.
I'm going to give you the first piece of wisdom Mark Cuban exposed recently, is his largest investment is Amazon stock, and he owns nearly $1 billion of it. So there, like, here's like a publicly famous investor. Everyone knows what he's invested in on television and publicly in late stage startups, and he has his largest holding in Amazon. The biggest mistake that he says entrepreneurs do, and I think I couldn't agree more, is they focus on raising money. Everyone thinks you need all this money to start a business. There are so many alternatives, and there's so many ways you can prove your concept without any money. I think what would happen is when you read headlines, so like, I'm sure a lot of you guys read like TechCrunch or Wall Street Journal, and all you read is so-and-so raised 45 million, so-and-so raised 500 billion, so-and-so is worth 2 trillion, blah, 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 blah. And then you're saying to yourself like, oh, I started a business, I need to go raise money. And you know what happens when you raise money? All you do is spend time raising money. 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, we went on a roadshow for a very large fundraise for our business. It was 3 months of traveling every single day working on pitches. It hurt our business because All we were doing is trying to raise money. And so it's interesting, that is the biggest mistake, because it's true. Raising money is such a big distraction.
A lot of Starbucks breakfast sandwiches.
We had a lot of
Starbucks. We had every day.
Yeah. And we had a pretty high-profile investment bank that was giving us Starbucks.
So what do I do instead of raising money? What if I thought raising money this whole time was going to be my savior?
There's ways to hack a startup to prove your concept. I think if your business model is, I want to launch satellites into the orbit so that I can give rural areas internet, you're going to need money. I don't know how to hack that without a lot of money. But most concepts, especially smaller entrepreneurs or like consumer brand driven stuff, there are ways to prove your concept. Like, you don't need the exact packaging. You don't need the exact ingredients. You just need to prove that there's a market for your idea. And the best is, everyone always refers to this, Airbnb, how I built this. The early days of Airbnb, how they just had to prove that there was a market for this stuff. And they would drive around, give people the keys, and whatever. There's so many shortcuts to just prove that you have a concept worth.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call them shortcuts. I would call them like actually proving that you have product market fit, that there's actually demand for whatever you're providing. And that's actually when you know you have a business, when people are actually, like, there's consumer demand beyond Facebook ads, Instagram ads, that, oh, wow, this is actually interesting to me. And that is what has been lost in entrepreneurship in the last decade because of how easy it is to digitally market.
And I think the other interesting thing is, like, when I think back to, like, when we started our first brand, 5-4, we had to go do a trade show called Magic, and we had to make a full collection. One, we didn't know how to do that. Two, we didn't even have the money to do it. You know what we did? We went to H&M, Zara, all of our favorite stores, ripped off the tag, printed logos, embroidered patches, took an entire line and said, if we get enough orders, we'll figure out how to make this shit. And it worked. Like, our number one selling.
And you maxed out a bunch of credit cards.
Yeah,
to pay for the booth.
Exactly. And like, our number one selling jacket was a track jacket we bought from H&M and screen printed 5-4 on it.
And our mom had to bail us out from the union overcharges. That's a true story.
That's good. Yeah, I feel like that sort of that thing that we all know so well in a startup is sort of getting lost when everyone's focused on how do I raise money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not thinking, how do I force this thing into the market? How do I force people to see this? You think, well, I just need to raise money. And if I do that, then I'll be able to figure everything else out.
Yeah, and that's the wrong way to think about a business.
Yeah.
You should show that whatever you're, if it's a software or good or whatever it is, a widget, just prove that people want it.
Yep. And I think it's the other thing is we meet entrepreneurs that are raising money and they'll be like, yeah, I'm at Goldman Sachs right now, but I'm moonlighting as this. And if I raise the money, I'll go then jump full force into this. If you're not even committed to it, do you think an investor would be committed to it? Like, you haven't even committed to your life. You haven't exhausted all your personal resources. Every moment in my life where I needed money, people could see it in my eyes. I was fucking broke. Like, credit cards maxed, we owed people money, and that's when people believe in you, and they're like, all right, this guy's giving it, or this girl is giving it all she got, to make something happen.
Yep. Okay, let's have some fun with some good old just lighthearted news.
Yes.
We have a list here of the most popular emojis.
Yes.
And I want to know what they are.
Can you guess?
Is it 10? We have 10, top 10?
Yeah, I just want to see if you can guess the number one. I was shocked.
Hard eyes.
What's hard eyes?
It's hard eyes. It's a smiley face with the hard eyes. The one that Future just used.
I don't even know.
What?
Hard eyes?
Heart.
Heart. Oh, okay. I have bad hearing. Sorry.
Did hard eyes make it?
Yeah, no.
What about the
hard
one?
Hard eyes, smiling face with hard eyes is number three.
Yes, so thank you.
I'm saying number one.
Number one is the, what's the purple, the dick emoji?
No.
No?
No.
Any guesses? Laughing, we got laughing cry face and also water water drip, which can also be used sexually. It's
whoa.
True, bro.
It's a PG.
Sounds like a Me Too up here.
I'm on TikTok. Okay? I understand.
Face with tears of joy is number one. This one.
Yeah, you were right.
Which one?
You were right.
Face with tears
oh,
of joy.
Oh, yeah, I use that all, every day.
Laughing, crying.
Yeah.
Anything surprising?
Heart was two. Rolling on the floor laughing, which is like crying face laughing, is four.
A lot of people are laughing.
Smiling face with smiling eyes, I guess like you're shy. Folded hands praying is six.
Right.
Double hearts is seven.
Wow.
Loudly crying face is eight. Number nine.
I always get confused. There's so many laughing faces,
that's
right?
That's a pretty good sign for the general. You know, we have all these articles, and we're going to talk about it at the end about mental health.
Everyone's laughing.
Everyone's laughing in love.
Tears of joy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think how often I have tears of joy.
In real life?
Yeah.
Hopefully never.
On Instagram, all the time. That's my go-to.
Yeah. Tears of joy?
Yeah. I didn't even know you can use those others as laughing. I was like, a little confused. Okay. That's my only go-to.
Okay. Okay, here's another one. This one isn't, I mean, I guess it's kind of unfortunate, but Jane Fonda has always been like a super big advocate. Everyone, if you haven't watched it, you should really watch her documentary. It's really good. I had no idea. She's apparently still at it, hasn't skipped a beat because she just got arrested for protesting.
Yeah.
What happened? What's she protesting?
So to really back it up, she's 81 years old. There's a lot of climate change protests happening in D.C. and London right now. And her life story, she was protesting the Vietnam War in the 60s, and she's always been part of like the activist movement in this country. And she got arrested yesterday. And the real interesting thing about this article is that at 81 years old, she is still involved with changing society. And the thing that burns, I think, all of us up here is that so many people complain about everything, but they don't do shit about it. And you can be a keyboard warrior on a particular topic, but if you don't actually put physical action toward it, I don't really give a shit what you think. And it's so impressive to me that Jane Fonda, after all these years, she has nothing to gain at this point, but she still feels passionate about these topics. And she knows she's so famous that when she gets arrested, it's going to shed light on the topic. I mean, I think it was a year, 2 years ago, Drama and I went to D.C. for March for Our Lives with post the Parkland shooting. And it was something we were passionate about, and we were like, we're sitting here talking and complaining about it. We need to be there and at least experience what's going on. And
we should have got arrested. We messed up.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been so much more impactful.
That was a very emotional like day, and you felt that there needs to be a change on this particular topic. And the audience here today is very young, and I know there's all these things that we are all talking about, sustainability, climate change. I mean, if you live in the valley, the freaking valley's burning down to the ground. That's just not because it's warm out. There's things happening in our environment that are causing these issues. And I don't know, to me, it was just like a proud moment to see that she still cares after all these years.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to your point, you can make a change no matter what your reach is. Like, I mean, just personally, our son's going through a medical issue. Off two Instagram posts, we raised $43,000 towards research for that. Right? Like, I'm not a celebrity. I know, no, I'm not doing that for any clout, but like, I'm not a celebrity. I'm a nano influencer, sub 5,000 followers. Like,
yeah. You're nanning your micro dick off right now.
I think micro.
not even micro. No, my point is neither Amanda and I have like celebrity followings, but you put something that's actually authentic that is relevant to you, your community probably cares about it. So
that's
you just have
the amazing. We talk so much about all the negatives of social media and people getting depressed and all that stuff. That is one of the amazing positives of the internet and social media, that you're able to start a GoFundMe account. We can talk about it on the podcast. We can do this stuff.
Yeah.
And you can really make an impact as, you know, a husband and wife that are not famous, unfortunately.
Right.
Sorry. I want you to get famous. So anyway, I agree. I think that that's huge. So everyone go out there and get arrested, right?
Yeah. The only thing, if anyone wants to stand with me on bringing back plastic straws, I'm with that.
Yeah.
I just had the worst fucking matcha latte because it was a paper straw.
Yeah. Okay. Here is the final topic.
Yeah.
I would like to try to save room for a couple of comments because this one tends to get a lot of comments.
Yes.
We talked last week on our podcast about how there's all of these articles coming out that millennials are the burnt out generation. And everyone's burnt out, and 50% of millennials have quit a job due to mental anguish. That being said, 75% of Gen Zers have quit a job due to mental anguish. So it's not trending in the right direction, right? So we had a discussion on our podcast, and I do want to give a little bit of a disclaimer. We're not, you know, a lot of this stuff gets called mental health, and by no means are we bashing anyone with serious mental health issues. That being said, it seems like this younger generation is claiming mental health and quitting jobs, and there's a lack of sort of that toughness. The same way we talked about raising money and what it takes to really go out there and start a business, what it takes to just go out from mom and dad's house and get into the normal workforce is a lot. But I'm guessing everyone here has been through that and is doing okay. I think that we are seeing this trend happen where more and more young people are not able to handle simply real life. And I don't know whether that's, I mean, some people claim that's social media, that kids are, there's statistics that kids are sitting in their bedrooms on social media and playing games, and they're not partying, they're not driving, they're not drinking, they're not doing any of the things that young people do to sort of figure out the world. Not that all that's positive, but people are getting their driver's licenses later because they just don't care to even drive.
Yeah.
So we had a big discussion about it on our podcast. Dee, I'll throw you under the bus. Dee called everyone pussies.
I did.
Said the whole generation is pussies. And you know, we got a lot of interesting feedback. A lot of people pushed back, obviously, and said, hey, don't hate on mental health. This is a serious thing. A lot of people said, yeah, all my friends are pussies.
A lot of people said all their friends are pussies.
Yeah.
Taylor said all his friends are pussies.
Yeah.
And I think some of his friends are here.
So it's an interesting... So it's an interesting thing that's happening that I think is worth discussing. Are people becoming pussies? Or is there a bigger, realer problem? What's happening?
So, you know, we've been talking about this to death. So I started just searching what other people thought about the problem. And one of the interesting takes I read was, which I actually agree with. So previous generations weren't piling up as much student debt, were able to get jobs and live a life that allowed them to own a car, eventually buy a home, get a loan to buy a home. And today, I think a lot of it has to do with that 2008 recession. It was so bad that it wiped out a lot of low-hanging opportunities for young people that I think has added to the problem. Because after I called everyone a pussy, I was like, I didn't feel bad about it, but like I just wanted to understand why it happened. And seeing, like, just take our, you know, I just missed millennial. I'm 39 because I
just
38.
Missed, right?
Yeah. It's 38. Fuck off. But it's interesting. If you're early 20s to late 30s, to own a home in LA, I would say is impossible. It's really, really, really hard, right? The down payment, that you have to put down, the mortgage, the insurance, all those things become very, very difficult. Wage increases have not matched previous generations. So I can see how those things add to an enormous amount of stress. You just paid the most ever for a college education, and then you compound the fact that all these expectations you have in your head aren't reachable at this point.
I would argue with you, though, that that's a part of the story, meaning what we're talking about is people. So on top of the fact that all of that is true, these young people can't keep jobs. They're quitting. So because, it's harder than ever, and you're less prepared than ever to deal with
it. So just to like elaborate on Dee's point, I think it's correlated in the sense that if you look at income inequality the last 10 years, it's compounded. You know, the top has just aggregated so much wealth. And you know, person out of college makes what, $45,000 to $50,000 a year, and how you live in Los Angeles, New York City, San Francisco, Chicago, it's virtually impossible. So, is that contributing to?
But are they quitting because it's so?
Yes,
they're giving up
because you're like, fuck it. This
you're
is
like,
too
I'm
have
making.
You changed your. You went from pussies to like, man, it's hard out there.
I mean, get.
Okay, hold on. How many people think that you have to choose one? How many people think it's just really hard out there?
But the people are probably afraid to say.
Okay, how many people think the young people are pussies? Okay.
So, but wait, here's another question I'd like to ask. A younger person told me that couples are moving in together at a much faster pace because it's more economical to live in a one bedroom and share a bedroom.
Yeah, good. Let's preserve the relationship.
Is that true? I'd like to know.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay, number one, thank you guys. Number two, we have another live event on Tuesday at Peppermint Club. So if you're a group chat fan, if you like this, come out to that. We are on all podcast places. Group chat is the name of it. Check it out. Thank you guys so much.